There seemed little power in the riposte, for its force all came from Wilson's wrist rather than from his full arm. But the sabre's edge still struck the taller man with such might that he lost his balance. He swayed, right arm flailing, and Wilson gently touched his weapon's point to his opponent's chest so that he toppled to the floor.
"Enough!" the master-at-arms called. "God's teeth!"
the fallen man swept his blade at Wilson's ankles in a fit of pique. The blow was easily blocked, and Wilson just walked away.
"I said enough, my lord!"
the master-at-arms shouted angrily.
"How the devil did you do that, Wilson?"
Lord Marston pulled off the padded leather helmet with its wire visor that had protected his face.
"I had you on your damned ass."
Wilson, who had planned the whole passage of the fight from the moment he made a deliberately soft carte basse, bowed.
"Perhaps I was just fortunate, my lord."
"Don't patronise me, man," Lord Marston snapped as he climbed to his feet. "What was it?"
"Your disengagement from the Sixth was slow, my lord."
"The devil it was," Lord Marston growled.
He was proud of his ability with foil or sabre, yet he knew Wilson had bested him easily by feigning a squeaking retreat. His lordship scowled, then realised he was being ungracious, and so, tucking the sabre under his arm, held out a hand.
"You're quick, Wilson. Damned quick."
The handful of spectators applauded the show of sportsmanship. They were in Horace Jackson's Hall of Arms, an establishment on London's Jermyn Street, where wealthy men could learn the arts of pugilism, fencing and pistol shooting. The hall was a high bare room lined with racks of swords and sabres, smelling of tobacco and liniment, and decorated with prints of prize fighters, mastiffs and racehorses. The only women in the place served drinks and food, or else worked in the small rooms above the hall, where the beds were soft and the prices high. Wilson pulled off his helmet and ran a hand through his long, fair hair. He bowed to his beaten opponent, then carried both sabres to the weapon rack at the side of the hall, where a tall, very thin and extraordinarily handsome captain in the red coat and blue facings of the 1st Regiment of Foot Guards was waiting. The guardsman, a stranger to Wilson, tossed away a half-smoked cigar as Wilson approached.
"You fooled him," the captain said cheerfully.
Wilson frowned at the stranger's impertinence, but he answered politely enough. Wilson, after all, was an employee in Horace Jackson's hall, and the guard's captain, judging by the elegant cut of his expensive uniform, was a patron. The sort of patron, moreover, who could not wait to prove himself against the celebrated Henry Wilson.
"I fooled him," Wilson asked.
"How?"
"The carte basse," the guardsman said. "You made it soft. Am I right?"
Wilson was impressed at the guardsman's acuity, but did not betray it.
"Perhaps I was just fortunate," he suggested.
He was being modest, for he had the reputation of being the finest swordsman in the dirty half-hundred, probably in the whole army, and maybe in the entire country. But he belittled his ability, just as he shrugged off those who reckoned he was the best pistol shot in Kent. A soldier, Wilson liked to say, should be a master of his arms, and so he practised assiduously and prayed that one day his skill would be useful in the service of his country. Until that time came, he earned his captain's pay, and because that was not sufficient to support a wife, child, and mess bill, he taught fencing and pistol shooting in Horace Jackson's Hall of Arms. Jackson, an old pugilist with a mashed face, wanted Wilson to leave the army and join the establishment full-time, but Wilson liked being a soldier. It gave him a position in British society. It might not be a high place, but it was honourable.
"There's no such thing as luck," the guardsman said, only now he spoke in Danish.
"Not when you're fighting." Wilson had been turned.